This is the rich, to me, the rich bass baritone of a lusty, shall we say, well-informed, enlightened, man who enjoys living, 20th century singer, Ed McCurdy.
Hand me down my walking cane. Hand me down my walking cane. Oh, hand me down my walking cane. I'm gonna leave in the midnight train, and all my sins are taken away. Hand me down my bottle of corn. Hand me down my bottle of corn. Oh, hand me down my bottle of corn. I'm gonna get drunk as sure as you're born, and all my sins are taken away. I got drunk, got in jail. I got drunk, got in jail. Oh, I got drunk and I got in jail. I had nobody for to go my bail, and all my sins are taken away. Come on, mama, go my bail. Come on, mama, oh, go my bail. Oh, come on, mama, and go my bail. I gotta get out of this golden jail, and all my sins are taken away. If I had listened to what mama said, if I had listened to what mama said, if I had listened to what mama said, I'd be sleeping in a feather bed, and all my sins are taken. If I die in Tennessee, if I die in Tennessee, oh, if I die in Tennessee, just send my bones back COD, and all my sins are taken away. Oh, hand me down my walking cane. Oh, hand me down my walking cane. I'm gonna leave on the midnight train, and all my sins are taken away.
We forget, Ed McCurdy, how good this old song really is.
You know, one of the, I think I mentioned to you before we started this, that one of the things I respect about myself, excuse me, as a singer, and respect about my taste, is that the fact that a song is so obvious does not prevent me from using it. Now, this song has not been recorded, I think, for about 15 years, because other ballad singers, well, it's too obvious. As a result, it doesn't get done. People are so afraid of the obvious, you know, the cliché fear, you know. Actually, the biggest cliché in our language is hello.
That's true. And the idea that here's a song that's so...
It's a beautiful thing.
It's funny, it's sad, mm-hmm. It's funny, and the fact that we knew it as kids prejudices us against it.
Yeah.
So many.
Yeah.
I hadn't realized this was the first time it was recorded in 15 years.
I have no great standards about how much a song has been done. If it's still a great song, I'll do it.
I think we should know something of Ed McCurdy. He sings so many songs of different variety, of different vintage. Ed, you sing restoration ballads. They are very mm-hmm. Lusty, earthy ones. When Dalliance Was in Flower, that was was that Elektra?
Elektra. Yeah.
There were two. There were two.
Elektra. I did one thing called when Sin Songs Pro and Con. You've got one of those coming up
we'll
later.
We'll tell you one of those.
And this was a study of songs extolling certain physical joys, and the other side was the con side was again anything. Mostly. And one of them is against even smiling, really, although it doesn't say so directly. But and then the Dalliance series is volumes 1, 2, 3, and 4. The fourth one is called Archly by the man that runs the company, the son of Dalliance. It's a joke. It's an allegorical title. When Dalliance Was in Flower, Maidens Lost Their Heads, and the contents are allegorical mostly. The allegory is thin for your listening convenience, but allegory nevertheless. This... These songs cause somewhat of a problem sometimes. I do them very rarely in public. I do a few of the gentler ones. None of them are, I would consider, really ribald. They're not bawdy, you know. This was an age when the sex act was sung about with almost a worshipful joy. And the songs are highly erotic, but not at all neurotic. And this I respect. And I happen to... I love life enough, both physically and spiritually, that it makes me happy to sing these songs.
The era itself, which the music and the literature reflect.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the covers of the Dalliance albums would turn a sensitive person away from buying them sometimes, particularly Volume 2, which is a horrid thing. It looks like a third-rate burlesque set. I told the owner of the company this, and I know whereof I speak, because I've worked third-rate burlesque in Chicago, by the way, at the Oriental Theater in 1941.
I think we should add, there's so much about you that I don't know and would like to know. Singer, performer. We just touched on the Dalliance songs, the old piece of Americana, Hand Me Down My Walking Cane. You do beautiful children's songs and cowboy songs and child ballads. And you say you worked burlesque. Tell us a bit of yourself. You're from Canada originally?
No, I'm from southeast Pennsylvania, right near Harrisburg. I was born in a place called Willow Hill. And with my father, who's still alive, bless his heart, at 96, lives in Shippensburg, which has a state teacher's college there. It's about 40-some miles southwest of Harrisburg. I started out as a gospel singer, a hymn singer, at WKY in Oklahoma City. That was back in the days of the Red and Blue Network, remember?
Mm-hmm.
And we used to have a program on Saturdays called Southwestern Stars, where I sang as a baritone, which was carried on the network. And from then I went to New York and starved a little while, and then worked a short term in vaudeville with one of the Ben Yost groups. Remember Ben Yost groups?
Ben Yost, Y-O-S-T.
Y-O-S-T, yeah. And then I worked for a while as a radio announcer and production manager of a couple of stations, hillbilly stations. And then I worked with the A.B. Marcus unit. And it was a traveling burlesque show. They didn't call it that, but there were. It was. Nudes hanging from curtains and all that sort of thing. And slapstick comics. And we played the Oriental in 1941, and I was in Chicago, and I remember lying in my bed almost dead drunk the morning of December the 7th, and it was the Planters Hotel. Do you know it?
Yes, up on Clark Street,
yeah.
Near the Clark Street.
And the radio had been on all night, you know, been left on. I hadn't turned it off. And I kept this, you know, kept coming into my sort of subconscious, and I was half awake, and I kept hearing this news. So the next day, I stumbled down to the enlistment office and tried to enlist. I'd already been classed a physical reject. I remember the sergeant sitting there with his feet propped up, and I was in a very patriotic mood. The war, you know. And I was rejected, finally, from all the services for various reasons. Physical and emotional instability, I think they call it kindly. I was a pretty heavy liver in those days. I've reformed... adequately since then.
Whence came this interest in all these songs?
I don't know. I don't really know. I started out to be an opera singer, and I still study. I've been studying for 28 years. I studied with Carl Hollister in New York.
Carl Hollister, who was the accompanist of John
Charles
Thomas.
And a delightful, lovely man.
Marvelous man.
Wonderful man. I still go back and work out on Handel arias and things just to keep the equipment. But I had the desire to be another Lawrence Tibbett, and I probably could have made it. But I had a very vague disquiet working as a baritone. I finally discovered what it was. You know what it was? I hate baritones.
Well, how would you? Are you a bass baritone?
I'm a dramatic baritone, actually. I have a wide range. I think a high and natural, which I can use, and I have a high B flat, which I can use in practice, and I can go down to a low D, which is a pretty good range. But I'm basically a dramatic baritone, and that's the type of baritones I don't like. And when I sort of stumbled into folk singing, in the meantime having worked as a MC and baritone for Sally Rand at her club in San Francisco, I love her. I don't recommend her for social teas and so forth, but for what she is, in her own terms, she's a wonderful woman. And then I finally stumbled into folk singing by accident in Canada. And I also sobered up there, too.
So folk singing acts as sort of a therapy here in a way, too.
I had a couple of children. Well, what it has taught me, you see, for a long time, it seemed to me that singing, the demonstration of your vocal dexterity, just was a fairly shallow thing. And then I suddenly discovered through hearing old recordings of Axel Schutz, bless him. He's pretty inadequate now, vocally, because...
Richard Dyer Bennett admires him
very
much.
It was Dick Bennett who first introduced me to the records of Axel Schutz. There's been no greater art singer anywhere. Well, then, with that and the combination of being interested in folk song, I suddenly learned the difference between the art of singing and the art of song. Now, in folk songs are, as a vocal idiom, going as they do from the pre-Elizabethan art to the hillbilly, is the wildest range. Mm-hmm. And as a singer, I'm a pretty damn good one, and I understand what I'm doing. And the challenge of singing a non-musical song non-musically, not trying to hell with the pear-shaped jazz, you know. This is emotion you're giving. You don't think in terms of music at all. Some folks' songs cannot be judged as music because they're not musical. You know, it's a strange, undefinable sort of thing, and it's a wonderful challenge. And I have grown as an interpretive singer, a recreative artist, by associating with folk songs.
I think that's why you're so endearing, if I could use that word, and you are
sure,
that.
Thank you.
You are.
I'm real charming.
Is because the everyone believes you when you sing. They believe that you're enjoying the song. You are actually believing the song. Pretty Sorrow, for example. Now, what a Pretty Sorrow.
This is a strange little song from the Southern Hill Country, obviously of English origin, or of the British Isles, and it's sort of self-explanatory. It's just one of those strange, rather pathetic little things of the man who feels inadequate to please his sweetheart, you know, for various reasons. He's illiterate, and he has no money and no land. He envies the landed gentry and so forth. And the interesting thing about this particular recording of it is Darling Eric Darling, who is now with the Weavers, as you know, is one of the most sensitive musicians I know, and he can't read music in orthodox terms, but this man feels more, and the accompaniment he does on this is the most ethereal, strange thing I think I've ever heard. Down in some lone valley, in a lonesome place, where the wild birds do whistle, their notes do increase. Farewell, pretty sorrow, I bid you adieu. But I'll dream of pretty sorrow wherever I go. My love, she won't have me, so I understand. She wants a freeholder, and I have no land. I cannot maintain her with silver and gold, nor buy all the fine things that a big house can hold. If I were a merchant and could write a fine hand, I'd write my love a letter that she'd understand. I'd write it by the river where the waters overflow. But I'll dream of pretty sorrow wherever I go.
certainly right about Eric Darling. As you said, it sounds so lonely. But there's something else that intrigues me. It's Ed McCurdy.